Welcome to Atlanta Housing Unlocked, a podcast about creating equitable, affordable housing, elevating people, and transforming neighborhoods in the city of Atlanta.
Hello, and welcome to the inaugural Atlanta Housing Unlocked podcast, brought to you by Atlanta Housing. Guys, this is where we're going to get to the good stuff. We're going to talk about affordable housing, empowering people, and transforming neighborhoods throughout the city of Atlanta. So I'm your host, Egypt Sherrod, and yes, you may recognize me from HGTV's Married to Real Estate, Flipping Virgins, and Property Virgins. I love the city of Atlanta so much that I've hosted 14 seasons and executive produced 8 of them surrounding housing throughout the city of Atlanta. And so driving even here to the studio, I said, my goodness, this population has exploded because there's how long does it take you to get there? And then there's how long does it take you to get there in Atlanta traffic? As much as I love how much everyone has embraced the city, there are a lot of people from Atlanta, like originally, and those who've moved here who want to get out on 285 and say we're closed because the population has exploded just that much. But as Atlanta continues to grow, many people are starting to feel squeezed out. It's the big squeeze, guys. They're getting squeezed out by soaring home prices, by international buyers. And yes, Atlanta is in the midst of an affordable housing crisis, just like the rest of the nation. I mean, it is a nationwide epidemic, but Atlanta housing is at the forefront of it. And that's why we're here to talk about it. We're on a mission to do something. In fact, one of the largest housing authorities in the country is Atlanta Housing, providing and facilitating affordable housing for nearly 22,000 low-income households. So that's, if you do the math, that's about 50,000 people. So if your fellow public housing authority agents, a housing stakeholder, a real estate investor, a community organization, or even who I deal with every day, frustrated people just trying to get into the market and worried about getting shut out of this transformative growth, then guess what? This podcast is for you. You are in the right place. We're going to give you solutions. We're going to give you the answers. So today, I am joined by Atlanta Housing President and CEO, Eugene Jones Jr. He's known as the real change maker. I was just getting the backstory from him. Some people call him the Michael Jordan of public housing. How do you like that? The Michael Jordan of public housing. Well, it gets no better than that.
Thank you so much. I appreciate those compliments. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
So you guys are turning around a pretty dire housing landscape. I know you're going to kick things off. Later, guys, we're going to have in this episode, John Skatch. He is the Director of Planning, Design, and Community Development. He's going to talk to us a little bit more. But Gene, all right, so you come from Chicago.
Yes, a nice cooler place.
I know you like cold weather. He was telling me you prefer the cold weather. You're alone on that island, just yes. So you know. But what was it about the city of Atlanta that attracted you here?
You know, it's funny that you asked. That's a great question. I was here probably in 1983 when I was in the military, and I came to Atlanta, toured it around. It's not like it is today. And so leaving Chicago, I said, let me try to venture and see what Atlanta mm-hmm. looks like now. I've heard great things about it. My colleagues talk a great story about Atlanta housing, what they've done across the country. And of course, we have real good legacies here with Renee Glover, who started this all in our Hope 6 programs, Choice Neighborhoods Now. It just seems like it was the right thing to do. There was nothing trouble about the agency because I worked on bad agencies. And so what attracted me is I know they had a good staff. I knew they had some promise. I know there's some opportunities that we can grow and be something that was not even recognized before about a housing agency, not just building, but also creating better neighborhoods.
Mm-hmm. You know, it's interesting to hear your story and your journey. What attracted me and my family 12 years ago. Wow, 12 years. It just kind of came and
yes,
went.
Yes, that's a question I want to ask. Why? Yeah. Why would you like to do this podcast about housing? What does it mean to
for
you?
For me?
Yes.
Well, number one, I'm a real estate broker for over 24 years. This is my passion. It's what I love. When I work with families and help them recognize the dream of home ownership, I still get emotional. I'm passionate about it. I think that's when you know that you're aligned with what you're supposed to do, when you feel that emotion and that joy every day. So that's number one. But my family and I also moved here seeking a better life. We came from the north, from New York City. I came to visit Atlanta and just fell in love with the work-life balance. The spirit of entrepreneurship was here. There's so much culture and richness. And I said to my husband, pack it up. We're done. We're moving to Atlanta. But truly, when he visited as well, he fell in love. And it's home. You know, this is the city that we love so much. And that is why I wanted to highlight every opportunity I could to highlight real estate, the better quality of life, our offerings here. But now, I mean, unfortunately, the folks that I deal with on a daily basis, which are families, mom and pops, people who want to recognize the dream of home ownership, first time home buyers, they are getting priced out. And it's a struggle. And I want to see them still have the same opportunities, have a seat at the table.
That's great.
That's my reason why.
That's great. Mm-hmm. And we feel the same way.
Yeah.
About home ownership, the program that we've had right now, doesn't mirror anything across the country because ours is a big program. Our home ownership program, we are very, very ecstatic about it. We have great community partnerships. We have home buyers first assistance, $25,000. I mean, you just can't beat the program that we have here. And again, I want to strengthen or really focus on something other than building sticks and bricks that we're building communities. We're trying to build legacies. We're trying to encourage people to say, hey, look, you not thought about it before, but let's think about home ownership because you can rent a home. We got to build equity. That is the name of the game, building equity. So you have building wealth.
Generational
wealth. That's what we
want
to do. Exactly.
Absolutely. A lot of people hear affordable housing and it just kind of goes over their head. They don't understand that it does affect them. They think, well, I can pay my rent or I can pay my mortgage. That doesn't affect me. But when something affects our community, it should affect us all, truly.
That's correct.
Affordable housing is one of the bedrocks of success. When you really think about it, when someone has stable, affordable housing, it opens the doors for their entire life. It's where do you go to school? What medical care is afforded to you? Who are your circle of friends? Are you staying out of trouble? You know, what's the neighborhood like? It sets you up for success. And so for us, when we talk about, you just said it, leaving generational wealth. Wealth goes beyond money. Wealth is also stability. It's your spiritual health. Your health is wealth as well.
Right. Well, here's the problem with all that, Egypt. Affordable. What does that mean? You know, if I worked at McDonald's, affordable means this to me. If I'm a millionaire, affordable means that to me. And so using that word, it just seems like it's a misnomer now. We need to come up with some other type of affordability, whatever that is, because it's different for different folks. Workforce housing. Affordable is something that is a numbers game. You know, when we sit there and do statistics, it says, okay, affordable means 60% below of AMI, area median income. Well, so what does that mean to me? We're trying to build housing that's affordable, but we're also trying to build housing that we can build that makes sense in the community, that we build in the communities. We're building stable neighborhoods. We're building community areas. You know, there's a Y. There's a Boys and Girls Club. There's something for someone to do. And not when we build affordable housing, it's seamless in the community. If we build something new, we want to make sure it fits in the community. It's not an ISO. That's public housing or that's assisted housing over there. We have to fit into the community. We have to have community involvement from start to finish. Because of the red tape, that's why it takes so long for this agency to build housing.
Well, just go there, please. Go there, because I know you're bubbling under, and we were talking about this a little bit off camera, but that's what this podcast is for, to really dig deep and get to the root of the tuta of it.
Right.
You want to help. You're a change agent, and you said to me, the reason that you moved across country and accepted this job, you said you've been in your current position since 2019.
4 years.
Was because you really wanted to help people. You wanted to make a change. And it just to me as a bystander, it's always easy to mess stuff up, but why is it so hard to fix it? Why so much red tape?
Well, we have too many regulators. I mean, the biggest one is U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development. We got state codes. We got city codes. We got to conform with everything. We got to check those blocks as best as we can to get the community involvement. Because if we don't, we can't move ahead. And so that's been the complexity. A lot of people sit there and say, okay, Atlanta Housing, you're sitting on all this land, all this vacant land. Yeah, we're sitting on some vacant land. We've got some committed. We got most of it committed. Then we have some parcels that we can't build on. We have to sell that. But it's the process. it takes so long. When we start sitting there thinking about, let's take our newest one, Choice Neighborhood, Bowen Home, mm-hmm. that we got a $40 million grant. Mm-hmm. That takes years to bring the community together, seeing what we're going to build, how many we're going to build this, why is this going to be, how many affordable units are we going to have? What are we going to fit around the community? Are we going to have a better school? Are we going to have a better neighborhood? Are we going to reduce crime? Mm-hmm. There's so many things that go into that.
And beyond then it takes, just building right, the house,
it takes
building a,
it
the
takes
unit,
four or right. five years. And people say, why does it take so mm-hmm. long? Because it's the complexity of financing. Because this is something that we never have done before as a housing agency, but we're compelled to do it because we have to have the community partners. We have to leverage our dollars to the extent that we can, but we got to do affordable housing. The sad thing about it is that when we build a big complex or a big neighborhood, we say we're going to build 3,000 units and probably 20% are going to be affordable. We can't still continue doing the minimum. We got to do the maximum, whatever that is. We got to do more because mm-hmm. getting 20% or 30% is just not enough. You're still pecking at it. Mm-hmm. And we'll never get there unless we sit there and trying to find a way mm-hmm. to incentivize these developers, whatever we can do to subsidize them to get housing in the neighborhoods. You just can't build a house and think that there's no services around because that's what people want. They want to be able to get in their car, mm-hmm. go home, drop their car and walk the neighborhood. Mm-hmm. They have a walking path. They have a bicycle path. They have a neighborhood grocery store.
Jobs
they have jobs
in the neighborhood
that they yeah. can walk to. They don't have to go across the town. As you said, the traffic. Traffic is crazy
in
Atlanta.
I think I used up all my nine lives today. Just this morning getting here trying to be on time. I think I used them up. Honestly, it's the reason I left New York City. Because there was no quality of life left there. I don't think we're at that point, but I feel, you know, when you walk throughout the city of Atlanta and talk to people and you ask 10 people, where are you from? And maybe only one is actually from the city of Atlanta
right.
because all the others have been pushed out. They've been pushed out into the county, just can't afford it. They're getting pushed out and pushed out further. You've been in your position since 2019, and I know you announced that you're going to be leaving soon. What is it that you would want your successor to actually focus on? What do you want to see happen when you sit on the sideline and you look and say, we came far, but now I'm passing that baton?
So you want to tell that person, and I've always been public about my chief operating officer, Terry Lee, to succeed me in this position.
Mm-hmm.
But you want Terry to tweak it. You don't have to change anything unless there's something major that we have not discussed, but go ahead and tweak it. Make it your own.
Mm-hmm.
When you own something, you take care of it a little mm-hmm. bit better than the rest. And so I just want to keep that path going, but also make sure that she keeps the door open for recommendations and she has to have the staff involved in what she does.
Mm-hmm.
You have to be inclusive. You have to go out. You can't sit behind a desk. Terry, you got to go out. You got to see the rest. You got to see what the staff is doing because they want to make sure that you understand the complexity and what they have to go through every day, the hardness of it. Going to a community at night, there's a fire or there's a shooting out there. How do you keep yourself safe? How do you communicate mm-hmm. to the community? How do you communicate to the city council, to the mayor? You have to have all those angles taken care of, but you have to make sure that you stay the course, that you have good policies in place, that you believe in your staff, you have good staff, and you continue along that pathway.
You know, when people think about Eugene, Atlanta Housing, I think they assume that the agency itself is only focused on vouchers in housing. For whatever reason, it's got that brand on it. Mm. But there's so much more as you've been peeling back the layers, you know, of that onion. Tell us about some of the other resources and the other programs that are provided by Atlanta Housing.
Well, we have a big program when it comes to resident initiatives, especially the seniors, especially the kids. We have different types of programs that we collaborate with social services in the city, also with the state agency. Mm-hmm. We do more than that. We have luncheons. We have homeowner training. We have community involvement. We have, hey, what would you like us to do on this piece of property? What's your vision? And then we also sit there and we try to think about doing different types of homes, corrugated homes, container homes, modular homes, what fits in the community. And so we try to develop different things, but we also are most involved in our kids. Right now, when you come into the housing agency, we have books for kids. I mean, books you can take home. So we're trying to encourage them to read when you come in here. We're doing things that we've not done before, or we have doing things that no one's ever thought about before. We have popcorn socials on a Friday to make sure that the residents come here and they feel more welcome, that they feel that they're stress because they can't find a home in this great city. And so we try to sit there and minimize the stress and give them something. You get free coffee, you get free power snacks, you get popcorn, but we reduce that stress. And so then we can talk to them. So they're not coming in agitated. They're coming in here and say, wow, this is quite different. We change the dynamics of how we serve people. Customer service is the number one thing for me. Number one thing, because when you pick up the phone, that you answer the phone. I don't like my staff to go straight to voicemail. I answer my own phone. I respond to my own emails. I don't have anyone in between.
Folks around the studio shaking their head yes right now. So this is something you guys know about Eugene. He picks up the phone. He answers those calls. Everybody's saying yes.
And you
yes.
go out. When someone calls you, say, Eugene, I want you to see this. Okay, let me get in my car. I'm going over there. I'm going to see it. Because you always have two sides of the story. You have the resident side of the story. You have my staff side. So you got to make a determination. But when you go out there at night at 1 o'clock in the morning and they're saying there's an incident out there, you're getting out there and them seeing you, that's profound for them.
Well, that's because, the personal touch.
Right. When you go out there on the property, it's not Gene Jones in a suit and tie. It's Gene Jones going just like I am right now. Mm-hmm. And when they see me, they say, oh, who's that? That's Gene Jones. He's our president and CEO. They identify me because I'm out there on the property. I call bingo at night. I do all those types of things that I'm trying to make sure that we separate the two and say, I'm no bigger than you. Tomorrow I can be homeless. Tomorrow I can be on the street by virtue of something I don't have any control of, and I want to be responsible. If I'm in a position of power, I should be able to do things for the people in those communities and be genuine about it. When you sit there and superficial, they'll know and say, oh, that's Gene Jones. He's not going to do anything. Mm-hmm. But you change that communication.
People need to know you're in the trenches.
Out there.
They need to know that you understand their plight.
Absolutely.
As well.
And so that's what I teach the staff. That's why I taught Terry. This is what you have to do to be successful. Mm-hmm. You don't have to do everything. You don't have to be everything to everyone, but you just got to be committed.
What kind of partnerships do you think need to be formed now with other organizations to make meaningful, swift impact?
I think we all need to know where all the resources are at and what the mission is in their agencies and how we can collaborate and do something bigger and leverage the dollars bigger, going to the community foundations, going to MacArthur Foundation, going with the plan that we have that this is successful. We're all in this together. There's no egos and we're not trying to outdo each other, say, oh, this is my program, that's my program. No, you go back to the mission. We're trying to build affordable housing. We're trying to build a living place where you can enjoy peace and tranquility, that you have better services, better schools, less crime, and that you're a participant instead of being on the sidelines.
I wish more people would make decisions and move with intention based upon being global citizens. Like, not just what's in it for me, what is in it for us? You know, how do we take care of each other? My grandma, and I'm going to get a little personal with you. I had the blessing of having my great-grandparents around. My Nana Sally Mae lived till she was 104, and my Nana Dolores lived till she was 103. And that was them saying hello with that truck behind us. So, but, you know, that's to me, that's the old school morals and values of recognizing if my neighbor's not doing okay, everybody on the block bakes a casserole and goes down because she's sick and we're going to take care of her kids while she's sick. You know, if somebody, house burned down, we're going to take in all their kids. My grandparents, literally, some of my aunts and uncles are not my aunts and uncles. They became my aunts and uncles because my grandparents took in the children on the block whose parents couldn't keep the kids, whose house burned down. One house had 13 kids in it. And when the house burned down, all the kids got split up. And my grandparents took in as many as they could. And they're my aunts and uncles that to this day I know, right? Because of that. That is community.
That's correct.
That is what we have lost. And in Atlanta Housing, I'm so happy to hear what you just said about, you know, it just being more than just the house or the unit. It is about creating that sense of community, that sense of peace, that sense of home.
Compassion.
For so many.
You got to be compassionate about human beings. And if you're not that's not what you should be doing. Mm-hmm. If a teacher doesn't like kids, don't be teaching. If you're working
in my industry.
Can
you say that again? I felt that in my shenanigans on that one. But so what is next? What's next for Atlanta Housing?
We're going to do some great things with Civic Center. Mm-hmm. Hopefully the Performing Arts Center, which they wanted to tear down. I said, no, that's not going to be torn down. That's legacy right there, especially for the city. When you have a signage on the freeway about the Civic Center, that meant something to the Atlantans here. Now, I'm not from Atlanta. I could have just said, tear down the whole darn thing. I said, but the tradition and the legacy, and this is what my staff told me, says, we graduated, we had concerts here, we had everything else. Mm-hmm. So why would I tear down something that I think we can build back up and bring a performance arts center? If that's the Grammys, is that Atlanta Public Schools with creative arts, anything I can do to make that thing be a legacy, it'll be a destination point. Mm-hmm. When I'm coming to Atlanta, got to go by the Civic Center.
And got to get got to keep the sign up there.
Right, exactly. I got to make it affordable. Mm-hmm. Building homes right across from Georgia Power. It's dynamic. It's got MARTA down the street. Mm-hmm. You got stores. You got supermarkets. That's the kind of community mm-hmm. you want to build. We just won a grant from Bowen Homes. That's another one that we're going to build some phenomenal things out there. And so these are the things that we got to keep moving. Yeah. Herndon Homes. Yeah.
During your tenure, Eugene, what are some of the programs that you've implemented?
With my staff, we provide training. A lot of industry leaders do not provide training. I'm talking about just from the senior staff, but also the middle managers. Mm-hmm. The middle managers will make you, they'll break you, make you or break you if you don't give them training, that they understand that they're a part of the team. Mm-hmm. We provide a team environment here in like nobody's business. Across the country, we're marveled at. We do a good Section 3 program. That means that we're taking our residents, giving them opportunity to get these jobs, not just jobs, but getting the jobs of contracting, being a general contractor, being a GC. Any type of professional opportunities that we can give on the Section 3 program, we want to put it on steroids. We want to make sure that we can make millionaires if they are trained. We can provide opportunities, reduce their bonding capacity so that they can get into the door and expound on their business and bring other residents in. Those things we've changed. We changed how we procure items through our process, but also give them the opportunity to build things that we think are a part of a neighborhood endeavor. We bring in the community in. It's just so many things that we've done about the books with the kids, all those types of things, opportunities. With my staff, we've been able to go to train other housing agencies across the country. We've been able to focus on.
Is that right?
Right.
You guys have trained other housing agents.
Yes, we have, because we're a leader. We're the foremost leader across this country about things that we've done that has not been done before. Not by virtue that we were just better, which we are, but we just do things very concise.
Yeah.
Our colleagues across the country would love to come to Atlanta to see what we're doing, how we build. Our Roosevelt Center that we have down the street from Atlanta Clark University. It's just beautiful how we bring back things to fit in the neighborhood that's prospering, that we provide an opportunity. Right there, we're going to have a coffee shop in the Roosevelt Hall. No one ever thought about that, but bringing something so people have somewhere to congregate and talk and expand and have some great opportunities.
I'm telling you. So this Atlanta skyline is ever changing, though.
Yes.
It's ever changing. My husband and I just completed a project over at CAU. We renovated, as part of a charitable project, the men's, athlete's lounge there. And we did a mural. And one of the biggest conversations or debates was, should we really do this mural of Atlanta skyline? Because next year and the year after, it's going to change. And
that's,
I said,
correct.
Well, we'll just come back and add a building.
Just put something in the middle.
We'll just come back and add a building. You know, you said something I loved, and I think it was a tweetable moment. I don't know if you guys caught it, but this isn't beyond even Atlanta housing. It's about being a leader, understanding that the people in the middle really can make or break you. And this was explained to me years ago. Like, if you look at a pyramid and you've got the person on top and you got here, if there's not a stable foundation and the folks in the middle are not holding and framing the structure, is even going to housing, then it's all going to tumble.
Exactly.
It's all going to tumble.
Real
it's
quickly.
All going to fall. So you've got to be able to invest and pour back. Go back and reach forward and pull people forward as well. That also feeds back into community and how the cycle of growth and the cycle of just compassion and growth.
It's the trust and credibility, because what we factor in is that we promote within. Mm-hmm. Unless you got to explain to me and prove to me that there's no one inside that's capable, we promote within. That brings great morale in any agency. Every 3 months that we have a quarterly meeting, we bring all the staff together. And so I have no script. I don't even let the staff give me any information. What I do is I talk to the staff. I give them information that I don't give to the press or anyone else, but I want to give to them to understand what's going on. We have an employee of the month. All those different things we change. Every quarter, we sit there and talk to all our staff, and we talk about what's going on. We invite our residents to some of those meetings. We have a great board. You got to make sure that the board is committed and they understand and communicate. And then next month, we're going to have a gala event for all the seniors that we're going to bring them all together, get them out of the house so they can dress up and dance and have fun, because they deserve to get out and talk amongst all the other residents. What's going on? What have we done? What do you see? What do you think we should do? What we shouldn't be doing? Something new that we bring into Atlanta housing.
I got something for you. I got to throw out there on the table. Gentrification. And so many who feel that their neighborhoods are being stolen from under them. What are your thoughts about gentrification and how people often even look at organizations like Atlanta Housing if they don't fully understand the fabric of what makes it? And they look at it like perhaps these organizations that are designed to help are hurting.
Thank you for bringing that up.
Tough question, but what we're here for.
That's an important one, especially when we start building in neighborhoods, just like Herndon Homes, when we relocate people, say, hey, look, this is what we're building, mm-hmm. and we're going to encourage you to come back. So then the critics will come in and say, well, they're not allowed to come back. So as I told you before, it takes about 5 to 6 years to start going vertical as we go through the financing and the red tape. Now, if I give you a voucher, and you have 2 or 3 little kids, male or female, and you're going across the city, and you find something that has a great school, you're closer to work, and all those other types of amenities, tell me if you're going to move back to where you used to live. You settle. You don't want to come back. I mean, the offer's there if you want to come back, but most of the time, I don't want to move, because moving is traumatic for anyone, especially your kids. If you're going to a school over there on the north and you're coming back to the south, you got to re-educate your kids about, you know, where they're living at. You got new school friends. Your work may be too far. I don't want to travel all the way across town again and go to work.
So is that what's happening?
That's what's happening, because people don't understand. They say, well, people are not allowed to. Yeah, they can come back. They don't want to come back. Or the rules are changed. They're different because you have a different type of community. Now you got to make sure that you can't throw trash out there. You got to pick it up. You got to have a dumpster. You can't have noise way at night like you used to have. It doesn't happen anymore. We're trying to build a community. Building a community, a mixed income development, provides an opportunity for these young kids to expose themselves and the adults to expose themselves to people who are working every day to encourage them to get their education. You can do this. You're together. You see people going to work. So I encourage you to go to school. Where do you go to school at? Well, I want to be an architect. Oh, you're an architect. Can you tell me what you do? Those types of interactions we don't get in school, because we adults, we don't visit our school system and sit there and educate these kids that you don't have to be an athlete. You don't have to be an NBA player. You can be a plumber. You can be Gene Jones and president CEO of a housing agency. They don't have those walks of life visiting them. So that's what you try to open up the doors to get kids involved and the parents involved. Say, hey, look, we can do this. Gene Jones done it. He was here for 2 years. He's gone and he's prospered. Let's talk to him. You bring that back.
With the bunion boot, he still showed up at 1 o'clock in the morning.
Absolutely.
That's an inside joke for y'all listening. Gene has a boot on his foot. And I said, well, what happened? You know, he looked like a champ in here though. So that's what it is. I mean, when we, and you know, obviously we have to address the elephant in the room.
Right.
And so on the subject of gentrification, you guys are saying we want you to come back, but we do understand that once you're moved and you're settled and you're happy and you're feeling comfortable, you're not choosing to come back. But the option is still there for
always.
You.
Always.
This is still home
always.
For you.
Always. And I contest anything that anyone says that you're not allowing them to come back. Yes, we allow them to come back. You have different rules. You have different types of things that you have to behavior. But it's nothing that you should know out before.
Mm-hmm. Well, you earned your wings.
Yes, I did.
Do you ever feel that way?
Well. I feel good.
You're fighting a good fight?
Yes, I am. I'm not going to stop until I'm always going to help. This is just what I do. Mm-hmm.
Well, I do want to bring someone else in to join a conversation with us. Guys, it is, of course, the inaugural episode of Atlanta Housing Unlocked. And I want to bring on our second guest, John Sketch. He is the Director of Planning, Design, and Community Development at Atlanta Housing. And as an urban planner and architect directly involved in Atlanta Housing's redevelopment planning efforts for a broad range of the agency's assets, including vacant land. I want to make sure I'm hitting them all. Vacant land, existing buildings, focusing on creating sustainable, high-quality communities, all centered on affordable housing.
Yep, you got it.
Welcome, John.
Thank you.
How
glad to be here.
Today?
Doing great. Doing
Absolutely.
Great. Glad to be here.
Yeah, we're just going to have a conversation about it. I mean, that's what this is. The podcast is, you know, just us talking about the thing that is really the elephant in the room. You know, people have got questions. They want to know what's going on next in Atlanta. Can I still afford to live here? You know, so you have an extensive background in planning, design, and community development. And I understand you previously served in roles at Central Atlanta Progress and global architecture firm Perkins & Will. But what made you want to uproot and join Atlanta Housing?
Well, you know, actually, Atlanta Housing, when I was in private consulting, design consulting, boutique architecture firms, Atlanta Housing was my client for a while. I was involved in a lot of great work that was going on at the agency under Renee Glover, Hope Six Projects, and our first Choice Neighborhood. So it was kind of a natural fit, honestly, to move out of the private sector consulting world and nonprofit in the case of Central Atlanta Progress.
Actually, some would say that they migrate the other direction, right? Because it can feel like a thankless job.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And so you're working for the community, you're doing the good.
Right.
Sometimes you see those folks hired away
into
the private sector.
That's
but you
right.
opted to go the other direction.
I went the other direction, yeah. And honestly, it was an easy decision to make because I just absolutely love what AHA is about. Mm-hmm. I love the mission. I've done that kind of work in the past. And so it was very easy to make that transition. Mm-hmm. And I've been, you know, here at the agency now for over 5 years and probably have accomplished more in those 5 years in planning and design than I ever had.
And that's something.
It really is. And so, you know, I come to work every day and I'm gratified for the work I do and for the people I serve. So it was an easy decision for me. Yeah.
What are some of your biggest challenges you face, though?
Well, probably the need to move quickly. We just have so much that we have to do and not a lot of time to do it. And just by the nature of what I'm involved in and by the nature of the level of quality that we want to build into our new communities, that takes time. It takes planning, it takes listening, it takes working with former residents, working with neighbors. And so, you know, in a lot of cases, you don't have that kind of time to spend and you have to move quickly. And so that's a challenge.
Yeah.
It's a challenge.
What I'm hearing, even from talking to Eugene earlier, is people really understanding the timeline that goes into development, to building a whole community.
Yes.
And so when you hear crisis and people are in need of housing, and they're saying, but we need it now.
Right.
And then you have the organization saying, we are at the forefront. We are providing it. We're working tirelessly every day to come up with programs and to develop communities.
Right.
And that's going to be a 3-5
10-year.
Do you know what I mean? There's a big gap between the need and what we can actually do. Things are being done aggressively.
That's right.
But I think people don't understand the gap in between.
That's right.
How do you offer some resolve for that?
Well, you know, I can only speak to the portion that I'm involved in, which is design and planning and the front end of work, you know, trying to get enough material out there so we understand what we're building and we can attract good developers, good partners. But because of the need, we have to try to do things simultaneously. So normally, you know, back in the day when I was consulting for Atlanta Housing, we would, you know, work on projects sequentially. Mm-hmm. They're big projects. They're big revitalizations. And so, you know, we would bite off one and work on that and then move on to the next one. We don't have that ability. We don't have that luxury to sort of take them in step like that. So we have to try to move everything forward as best as we can simultaneously and do it quickly. Mm-hmm. So that doesn't solve necessarily the new housing problem right away. You know, on our vacant sites, it takes time, but we're mm-hmm. trying to move things forward as best as we can, as quickly as we can. And of course, we have other sites that we're, you know, we're providing HomeFlex vouchers to other developers not on our site. So we're tackling it that way as well. So, you know, we do what we can. We move things forward as best as we can simultaneously.
So John, I know Atlanta Housing has a 5-year strategic plan to redevelop and restore essentially 10,000 units in the city of Atlanta. What role do you play in that?
So I am, again, I'm on the front end of things. I am usually directing planning work to get vacant land set up for future development. That requires some mm-hmm. time. You know, I'll give you an example. Our Bowen Homes site, 74 acres. It's a big site. It's on the northwest side, probably the biggest vacant piece of land we have left. We were lucky enough to get a 2-year planning grant so that we were able to work with the community, listen to the community's objectives, listen to our former residents, and put that into the development plan and get a developer or a development team on board that will deliver on that. But that's 2 years. We don't have that luxury of time. So, you know, so I try to work with our staff to figure out how these sites need to develop, try to look for clues in policy and maybe do some community engagement, some visioning, some listening early on so that we make sure that when we issue a request for proposals for developers, it's going to have information in mm-hmm. there that is going to benefit ultimately the community.
So let me slow walk this, before we do, I want to go back to something you said where you go in and you said, we listen to the community.
Right.
What's the community saying? When you go, so where are you, number one? Is it at a community center? Where are these held?
So it depends. I mean, if we have, like on Bowen, if we have the ability to do a extended planning process, we will set up the format to do that. Actually, Bowen happened during COVID. Mm-hmm. So a lot of the work was done virtually. You know, steering committee meetings were held virtually, but we did have an opportunity to go out on site, conduct workshops. We had a partnership with the local church and had several charrettes at the local church and partnered with the neighborhood planning unit and really worked closely with them. So that was a situation where we were fortunate to have HUD funding to help create that, basically create that platform. If we don't have that, then we try to get with neighborhood organizations, start meeting with them, meeting with the neighborhood planning units, and doing what we can, coming onto their turf and talking to them.
And they say, and they'll tell you, this is what we need, that we currently lack.
Yeah.
If you're going to do this project, which we desperately need, then we also ask that you incorporate these elements.
Right.
And that's how it works. And the reason I wanted to break that down is because, you know, this is our first podcast. We've got folks from every angle listening and waiting for the answers that they want to hear. So there sometimes is, you know, there's a learning curve.
Right.
And so when we talk about these things, I just want to make sure it doesn't go past anyone or over anyone's head, that we all have the basic level of understanding of how the process is actually working.
Right.
So now you've done this. You went in, you did the work, you did the legwork, you've talked to folks, you've got an understanding about what the trade-off is and what folks are needing. What happens next?
So then the next step is you really need a development partner to come in and help build the site. I mean, we're not in a position right now to build to build multifamily housing. I mean, we may get there at some point, but we're not there right now. So you have to get a very good development team on board to be your partner in building the housing. And so that takes time. You have to put out an RFP. One of the things I'm doing right now is working on 4 RFPs for 4 of our vacant sites to get that moving. But then you also have to work with partners in the city. The city is incredibly important. The departments at the city, they are our partners, Parks and Recreation, mm-hmm. Watershed Management. You can't build a good transformative development without having those partners in place. And Atlanta Public Schools, folks want to see better schools sometimes, or they want to see a school. You know, so you've worked with Atlanta Public Schools, Invest Atlanta, grocery stores, all of those things that help a community be sustainable and be a place where you really want to spend your time. So there's a lot of work to do after the planning period.
And, you know, and I had that conversation a bit earlier with Eugene and asked him the question that I'm going to ask
you.
Same thing is beyond the housing.
Right.
How important is it that we're developing the communities to sustain the housing?
It's essential. I mean, of course, housing is our number one focus. We have got to deliver affordable housing. There is a housing crisis.
But what comes first, the cart or the horse, or simultaneously?
Well, you do it both. Ideally, you try to figure out, you know, on the front end, how it all works together and where is the need beside housing? Where is the need in the community? Where does the neighborhoods where you're going to build, what do they want to see out of it? What do they really need? It could be streets, could be parks, could be shops. We hear a lot about grocery stores. So, you know, you try to figure that out and then you try to move it all forward. But you can't just build housing in isolation. I mean, you know, we build in neighborhoods. Mm-hmm. And like the mayor says, you know, it's important to lift up neighborhoods so that these are places where you can raise kids and kids will succeed in the future.
It's a big part of it.
It's a big part of it. And it's a big part of, you know, making Atlanta a more equitable place and moving this city forward. So, you know, that we believe in that. That's what we do. That's what I do a lot. And so it's not just about the housing.
You don't
it's
just
about
grow up in the house. You grow up in the community.
That's exactly right. You grow up in the neighborhood. And, you know, we all, I'm sure, have fond memories of the neighborhoods that we grew up in, those places we used to go as kids, you know?
I grew up in Philadelphia. Where did you grow up?
I grew up in Chicago, you know, and I used to go down to the Ben Franklin. For those who are old enough to remember that dime store, you know, I used to go down there. So,
but that's the good stuff that makes us and that, you know, we want our future generations to know.
And
I still talk about how I remember. I grew up in Broad and Olney in Philadelphia. and usually when I say that, there's crickets. Yeah. But I remember sitting on the front step.
I
remember the kids on the corner playing double dutch.
Getting water ice.
Yeah. Water ice.
Going down for a cheesesteak or something. I mean, you remember this stuff.
I would walk. My grandmother would give me a dollar and say, go to the bodega.
Yeah, that's right.
And I would go around the corner. And back then, for a dollar, you can get 100 pieces of penny candy.
Right.
Back
exactly.
Then. I mean, so
exactly.
But that's the stuff, right?
Those are the memories that we have
from our community.
It is. Yeah. And you want to be safe. You want to be able to go out and you want to be safe. You don't want to feel like, you know, you have to look over your shoulder. You want to be able to run and, you know, explore the neighborhood and feel safe about it. So that's part of what we do. We're trying to build that with our partners. You know?
When we look at the landscape that makes up Atlanta, where are we focused right now? Where are some of the pockets?
So we have this, we're kind of, we have, you know, properties everywhere in the city. But we're really, for our vacant land, we're really focused on a sort of swath of land that runs from the northwest. So up there on Hollowell Corridor, that's where Bowen is. The Proctor Creek Greenway, beautiful project that's going to connect to the river. Then down through, on a diagonal line, through the center of the city, our Civic Center development is there. It's tremendous, going to be a tremendous place when it's built out in God, however many years that takes. And then down into the southeast and toward, you know, our Thomasville Heights site, our Englewood site, which is not far from here, and it's under construction. So we're really focused on this diagonal northwest to southeast swath of land where we have a lot of our vacant land.
So I've got one more question
that I think
is probably the burning question for a lot of people listening. So as we're developing the city of Atlanta, we're trying to make it more affordable. Affordable means different things to different people.
Right.
What price range per type of unit? Can you give me an idea of what the target is?
Yeah. You know, I'm not fully qualified to answer that question.
I know.
I'm not going to do that. But I will say that we don't build for a very specific price range.
Right.
We build mixed income development. So a multifamily building is typically going to have a variety of different income groups and family structures living there. So it goes all the way from Folks that are on the low end of the spectrum, you know, below 60% area median income.
So we've got some rentals.
We've got some real, you know, subsidized what you would call traditional public housing, but we don't really use that anymore. But folks that are really in need of the voucher, and then we have units that are more workforce and they're supported by low income housing tax credits, and then market rate units. So standard, you know, basically apartments that rent for whatever the market bears around. And that's all in one building. And that's been the HUD model for years and years, and the Atlanta housing model as well. So, you know, you build neighborhoods that are diverse, a lot of different incomes, a lot of different family types, a lot of different people living there. And those are the kinds of neighborhoods that thrive, you know, over time.
What is your biggest dream for Atlanta housing?
Oh, my biggest dream is that we can, you know, deliver on the mayor's challenge, the mayor's goals, do it in the time frame, and do it with very high quality development, and give something to this city that will live into the future. That, you know, 50 years from now, 60 years, you look back at what we did or what we're doing now, and you'll say that was the right thing. These are great places. We love these places, and Atlanta Housing had a role in doing that. That's what I'd love to see.
Love it. John, thank you so much for joining us today. John Skatch, guys. Hey, listen, guys, thank you for joining the inaugural episode of Atlanta Housing's Unlocked podcast. Make sure you join us for our next episode. I'm Egypt Sherrod, and don't forget, join the conversation online as well. You can follow Atlanta Housing on all social media platforms at Housing Atlanta. Leave us feedback. What do you want to hear? What do you want to learn about as we continue to explore affordable housing topics? And as always, for more information on the programs and resources you hear about today, you can visit our website, atlantahousing.org.